A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rehm, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, August 29, 1982, entitled A Circle of Quiet, in the series What the Church Has Forgotten, AA Remembers. The texts for the sermon are Psalm 43, verse 10, Isaiah 26, verses 3 and 4, and Romans 12, verses 1 and 2. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
Times when she needs to be free from every human contact, from all human beings. And she has found a place that she calls a circle of quiet. It's through the pasture and over the hill and through some bramble bushes which scar her legs a bit. But she says it's worth it all finally to arrive at the little brook that makes its way through the countryside, which has over it a natural stone bridge on which she can sit dangling her feet in the water, looking into the water to see the reflection of the sky. And she says it seems that the leaves never seem so green, nor the birds sing so sweetly as when she's there. And then she says, perhaps it's only because when I'm there, I am aware. I listen. I hear. And she says a little time there and the frustrations, the impatience, the prickly pride of my being seems to be burned away. And what is essential is left. And once again I gain a sense of perspective and begin to feel human. And the book that she wrote by the name A Circle of Quiet was written before it was named, but that particular name leaped off the page to which I've just referred. For her book is written in journalistic style, filled with insights and intuitions and glimpses of eternity, which can only come in the circle of quiet. Out of a life that has slowed down, paused, become still, to know that He is God. And this morning I am recommending to you that you develop and cultivate a circle of quiet. A time, a place, a daily experience of solitude, meditation, and prayer, which is the essence of the counsel of step 11 of the Alcoholics Anonymous program, the 12-step program for a recovering alcoholic. I am skipping over steps 8 and 9, which deal with making restitution to those who have been wronged to the extent that it is possible without doing further damage. Certainly there is a sermon there. However, I wanted to be done by Labor Day and I had to cut out something. And I'm also skipping over step 10, which counsels us to do that which we have already looked at, take the moral inventory again. In other words, that which step 4 counseled is counseled again as a continuing process, because the Christian life is dynamic and we never arrive. It's not a once-for-all thing. Once done, it's behind us, but needs constantly to be engaged in. And that brings us to step 11, which says that we will, by prayer and meditation, seek conscious contact with God as we understand Him, praying only for a knowledge of His will and the power to fulfill it. That step is good counsel. And I suggest it to you this morning under the title, A Circle of Quiet, a time and a place where we can find ourselves again in touch with ourselves, with the world, and with God. A time and a place in which we learn once again to be human, to get our attitudes and our outlooks shaped once again according to the Spirit of Christ. AA is very serious about this program, and in its 11th step, it gives the way, the counsel by which the person who is a recovering alcoholic is able to nurture and to sustain that new life. AA recognizes that one continues in sobriety and sanity and moves toward health and wholeness, not in one giant leap, but a step at a time, a day at a time, indeed, moment by moment. And that's why in AA they speak of recovering alcoholics, not recovered alcoholics, because they have learned through bitter experience that one is never cured. One can only be in process of being cured, which actually reflects the Greek of the New Testament for the word salvation, for the verb to be saved, for actually used in that sense, the New Testament speaks of our being saved in the progressive tense. We've stressed too much that once-for-all commitment as though that once done was behind us and then we could go on about the business of living. Much rather, we are in process, we are people in process, we are being saved. And AA knows, through the experience of thousands and millions of people, that it is a moment-by-moment and a day-by-day process, and the only way to nurture and to sustain that new life is to find a circle of quiet in each day when we cultivate the practice of God. Sometimes, as I have said previously in this series, I think the recovering alcoholic has an advantage over the rest of us. For he is not unique in that he has a problem. We all have problems. He is only unique in the nature of his problem, and the nature of his problem is such that he can never forget that he has the problem. He must live with it, and he must deal with it day by day, and therefore for him, this daily appointment, this time of solitude, of meditation and prayer, is an imperative, where for most of us, it is considered an option, maybe a luxury. What the church has forgotten, AA remembers. Or maybe it's not fair to say that the church has forgotten. Maybe if we were more honest, we would have to admit that all of us have known and have been counseled, even from this pulpit from time to time, that it is necessary to cultivate one's devotional life. It is not true that we have forgotten. It is simply true that this practice that we admit is necessary is a practice that we don't practice. At least I sense that that is true of too many of us too much of the time. The recovering alcoholic does not have that luxury. And as a matter of fact, neither do any of us. For we only fool ourselves, or perhaps stated more accurately, we only cheat ourselves. And so today I want to recommend to you and encourage you the practice of a circle of quiet, and the practice of solitude, prayer, and meditation, in order that you might find the peace of God that passes understanding. AA takes this very seriously, and step 11 counsels it. And then there are various aids to devotion, to meditation and prayer, which are supplied through Alcoholics Anonymous. Perhaps one of the finest is this little book, which a friend dropped off on my desk the other day. It's called 24 Hours a Day. There is a paragraph addressing our human situation, a brief meditation, and a brief prayer for every date of the year. I thought it would be interesting to see what it might say for August 29. And as Providence would have it, this sermon was precisely timed, for the first sentence is this: we cannot get along without prayer and meditation. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking. Our thought lives will be placed on a much higher plane when we start the day with prayer and meditation. We conclude this period of meditation with a prayer that we will be shown through the day what our next step is to be. The basis of all prayer is, "Thy will be done in me and through me today." Am I sincere in my desire to do God's will? And then this brief meditation, breathe in the inspiration of goodness and truth. It is the spirit of honesty, purity, unselfishness, and love. It is readily available if we are willing to accept it wholeheartedly. God has given us two things: His Spirit and the power of choice, to accept or not, as we will. We have the gift of free will. When we choose the path of selfishness and greed and pride, we are refusing to accept God's Spirit. When we choose the path of love and service, we accept God's Spirit, and it flows into us and makes all things new. And then this brief prayer: I pray that I may choose the right way. I pray that I may try to follow it to the end. So much for the 29th of August. One such little meditation for every day of the year. Helping the recovering alcoholic in the daily practice of the presence of God. And this is one of many aids to devotion which are available. One relatively recent book, 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, dealing with this 11th step, suggests to the novice in this whole practice, and you must recognize that for many people, being confronted with this imperative for their health and wholeness, they are like children stumbling around, as are so many of us. How does one pray? How does one meditate? How does one practice quietness of spirit? In the rush, the busyness of our lives, it is so much the opposite of that time of being quiet and still and knowing that He is God. The suggestion made in this particular book is that the prayer of St. Francis that was so beautifully sung last week be the focus of meditation. Lord, make me a channel of Thy peace. Where there is discord, help me to plant love, and where there is hate and where there is envy and all of the negative things countered by the positive, and then help me to desire to be not so much understood as to understand, to be consoled as to console, to be forgiven as to forgive. For it is in understanding, consoling, forgiving, etc., that we find all of these graces, as it is in dying that we are born to eternal life. That prayer, the suggestion is, could be gone through once, twice, slowly, each phrase thought upon, reflected upon, and I submit to you that that prayer could well be a part of the diet of every day, and I believe it would never grow old. Put it together with the 12th chapter of Romans and the 46th Psalm, and one would have the meat and potatoes of a devotional life, I would guess. But however one does it, or whatever resources one uses, the fact is that it is so all-important to practice the presence of God. And as I speak to you on this subject this morning, I probably do so the first time in my ministry, speaking about a circle of quiet out of a circle of quiet. This has not been exactly the kind of week in which one found it very easy to keep the circle of quiet. I was very conscious of that all week, so I started early. Thursday night was a wedding rehearsal. Then Friday at 5 a wedding, and 6:30 a rehearsal, and 8 o'clock a wedding. And the time I got to the 8 o'clock wedding, I went in to find the vows that had been selected, and I couldn't find them. And if you would see my desk, you wouldn't be amazed at that, but nonetheless, I thought I had picked up every piece of paper on it, but they weren't there. First time ever happened to me. I thought I remembered how the vows looked on the page, their spacing, so I rifled my file, and I found another copy that looked like it might be the right one. And I ran up here to the groom, and I said, "Are these your vows?" And he said, "Those are my vows." I said, "Thank God." Ran back, put them on my desk, put on my robe, picked up my book, and came out here without the vows. Well, then yesterday I had to do two more weddings, and you know, by that time, well, I looked at the beautiful bride yesterday afternoon. She was very anxious, very nervous, very tense. I looked at her and I said, "What is your name?" Only half kidding. And well, I was glad when it was all over. And then this morning I thought back to the routine, up at 5, into the kitchen, stumbling a bit. Instant coffee every other morning, but Sunday morning with Mr. Coffee. That way Nancy can get it all ready on Saturday night, and all I have to do is take the pot that already has the water in, turn on the switch, and pour the water in the top. I did that as usual, put down the pot, went to the record player to put Bach's Mass in B minor on, as I always do, and as those familiar sounds began to emanate over the stillness of the house, I stumbled back to the kitchen only to find that I hadn't put the pot back in the coffee maker. And so the coffee was all over the counter, dribbling down on the floor. It took every bit of paper toweling we had, plus Nancy's dish rag. So, knowing I'm going to speak about the circle of quiet, I said, "Lord, I'm just not going to be upset. I'm just going to wipe this coffee up and make me some instant coffee." Well, what I'm saying is the circle of quiet does not present itself always in that easy fashion whereby everything just goes the way it ought to go. But it does make a difference when all of those things happen to us if we have been practicing the circle of quiet. AA gives us many resources for devotion, and there is an immense literature in the Christian tradition, but of course our primary source is the Word of God, this beautiful 46th Psalm. Isaiah 26:3, I take those two texts simply as illustrative of the kind of biblical statements that, once they permeate every pore of our being, can actually create the consciousness and the spirit of which they speak. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Invariably, I read that psalm at a funeral. It feels right. It creates the right environment for the celebration of life and death. "Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am God." How many times have we not simply repeated that statement? And repeating it, experience the presence of God of which the psalm speaks. "Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee. Trust ye in the Lord forever, for the Lord Jehovah is an everlasting rock." From the writings of Isaiah. The historical context of both of those psalms may be the same. But whatever the historical context is, it's not terribly important. The fact is that those psalms or writings of the prophet arising in a historical circumstance that was filled with crisis and danger, a fearsome reality, were a reflection of the ability of the biblical writer to find the peace of God in the midst of the storm, to celebrate the presence of the God of Jacob in the midst of all of the turmoil and the chaos of life. And I submit to you, if you can say, in the midst of the crisis, because you have cultivated in the circle of quiet, be still and know that I am God. There is hardly a crisis that you will enter. There is hardly a raging storm that you will engage. There is hardly a rushing stream that you will have to ford that will not become submissive in the presence of God that will be consciously with you. And from Psalm 46, Martin Luther wrote, "A mighty fortress is our God." And from Isaiah 26, 4, Augustus Toplady wrote the beautiful hymn, "Rock of Ages, cleft for me, let me hide myself in thee." For the everlasting rock of Isaiah 26, 4 is literally the rock of ages. Now I select those particular verses which are just two of a myriad of testimonies from the Scripture in order to set up examples of the kind of power of the Word of God that can permeate our being if we have cultivated daily His presence and hid His Word in our hearts. But I point you to Paul's statement in Romans 12 as perhaps the classic biblical expression of what A.A. is speaking of in step 11. "I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice unto God, holy and acceptable, which is your reasonable worship. Be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you might prove what is the will of God, holy, acceptable, and perfect." Or as Phillips has paraphrased that last verse, "Don't let the world around you squeeze you into its mold, but let God remold your minds from within so that you may prove in practice that the plan of God for you is good, meets all His demands, and moves toward the goal of true maturity. The 12-step program would move the recovering alcoholic toward maturity, toward wholeness, and of course, it is the intention of the gospel of Jesus Christ that we might be whole. Salvation in its root is the same root as salve, and God would salve us and massage us and shape us into the fullest expression of what it means to be human. And I trust you know by now that this series has not been for alcoholics. AA has simply latched on to the basic biblical formula for the rescue and the restoration and the preservation of the human person. Moving from the acceptance of the unmanageability of life to the commitment of the power beyond ourselves, the diagnosis and the remedy, as we see it in the 12 steps, is the diagnosis and the remedy, as we see it in the gospel. And the wisdom and the insight of the 12 steps as they move then into what we would call the Christian life has a beautiful logic all its own, which in this 11th step is telling us that the only way to nurture the life of the new creation is through prayer, meditation, solitude, living out of the circle of quiet. There is no magic to it. It is as simple as that. And as I said a moment ago, perhaps for the first time in my ministry, I preach about the circle of quiet, out of the circle of quiet. And I want to share that with you. I have preached from time to time on the subject of prayer. If we would go back over the last 10 or 12 years, you would find them punctuating here and there the schedule, because one must deal with prayer, this most important aspect of one's Christian existence. But I must say that I would preach on prayer out of a sense of obligation and duty, and not out of a rich and full life of prayer. In fact, I have the vivid knowledge of the fact that the sermons that I have preached on this subject have been most helpful to those of you who have been so relieved that I had such a problem with it too. That was always the feedback when I would speak on this subject, because I have acknowledged before you, I have always been honest with you at this point, I have not been a man of prayer. I have not found the disciplines of the Christian life easy to come by. I have not been consistent. I have not been satisfied. And I guess in sharing that over the years with you while still calling you to prayer, perhaps you found some relief that was true of me as you found it true of yourself. But I would say to you now that for the first time in my life, I can speak out of a circle of quiet and tell you how good it is. As I was in seminary, I worked with a man who was a great model of Christian devotion. There was a time in my life when it was very disciplined and very deliberate. And I'm afraid the rest of my ministry has been in reaction against that. I used to get up at 6 o'clock every morning, and I hated it every morning. And I had a little book with a prayer list, and I went methodically through that prayer list, and I hated it. I am not a disciplined person, and I chafe against that kind of exercise. I was really relieved when I got so smart that I recognized that you can't program Christian devotion, that it ought to be spontaneous. And I finally decided if it was what the saints had always said, that you should give God the best part of your day, then for me it surely wasn't 6 o'clock in the morning. But I know that in that reaction against that discipline, in finding that it certainly was true that there could be a spontaneity about praying at the red light and walking down the beach and sitting alone and watching a sunset, still, to be honest, without some skeleton of discipline, without some deliberate purposing of that circle of quiet, the other does not happen as easily either. It is when I am purposefully devotional, when I am still and know that He is God daily, that I find that the rest of life, the rest of the day, can be a day of praying without ceasing. But without some discipline, it does not happen automatically. Now, I want to say to you this morning that it is a beautiful experience experience, and one can get to a point where that is the most important appointment of the day. Truly the vital breath by which one lives. I would not want to lay a heavy trip on you this morning, those of you who are disappointed that I will not relieve your guilt for still stumbling and bumbling about in the matters of devotion. But I know that it doesn't work either to do it out of some heavy sense of guilt or obligation. I simply bear witness as a fellow pilgrim this morning. Maybe I'm getting old, misplacing the coffee pot, maybe mellowing, who knows. But sometimes one comes to a point where one delights in practicing the presence of God. And the focus of prayer is set forth in that 11th step, a knowledge of thy will and the power to do it, is really the bottom line. I've fought that too. I have struggled intellectually with prayer. I have struggled against adding at the conclusion of my prayers, thy will be done. I have argued it and debated it and wrestled with it and struggled with it. And finally, this old man comes to the point of really believing, sensing that that is the bottom line. Just show me thy will and give me the power to do it. For he loves us with an everlasting love and with a compassion that never quits, with mercy that is new every morning, overshadowing us, undergirding us, longing only for the fullest expression of all of the beautiful potential with which he has endowed us. Finally, this old struggling pilgrim is ready to say, just show me thy will and give me the power to do it. And out of the circle of quiet is born a peace that passes understanding.